Of Internet Wonderland. I hope my voice finds you well this evening. Welcome back to my home. This is Cheshire's Place. As always, I am your host, the melodious one, Mr. Cheshire. You can always find me in my small little corner of Internet Wonderland by clicking a like on the Facebook group page, Cheshire's Place, A Looking Glass and a Logical Madness. You can listen to this episode and all other content on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and many other platforms. And if you ever feel like dropping a line, saying hi, or giving any thoughts or suggestions for upcoming episodes, feel free to email me at CheshireLookingGlass@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at @PlaceCheshire. So, here we are, another geektastic Thursday evening. The weather is meh here in the frozen tundra. But that's okay, we're used to it. So, let me ask you. Mainly, this is a question for all of my professional wrestling fans, past, present, and hopefully future. What would happen if you were able to create the ultimate wrestling stable? Better yet, what if you're able to take a wrestling stable from the past or from the present and tweak it to your heart's content? Add people that you think may that would give it more of a presence, or take people out that you feel would be more or less dead weight. So I think we're about to answer that question tonight. We are going to take a nice little dive inside the rabbit hole of wrestling factions. And by we, I do not mean me, because as custom for every Thursday night, I have my co-host with me. He is my brother from another mother. He is my best friend. He is my hetero life mate. He is the man, the myth, the legend, Monkey. How's it going, brother?
Oh, it goes. How about you, Cheshire?
You know, adjusting to the new schedule that I have myself on, about to put myself through some more gym workouts early morning. I'm a glutton for punishment, what can I say?
Yeah, that sounds like way too much work for me. That's totally against my religion. That and wearing pants. I don't do either of those.
Yeah, he's pretty much freeballing it right now in his chair. Thankfully, I bought him a chair for himself. That way he could actually do that.
Just marking my territory.
Okay. Wow. So, wrestling factions, Monkey. I mean, there have been tons of them.
Oh yeah,
over the years.
We were doing some minor research before starting here, and we found a nice, lovely list on shout out to cagematch.net that has compiled a list of known factions that have been around. The first like couple hundred of them are pretty much ranked on how people rank them. And then after that, it goes on for like 3,000 some odd listed factions. And this is not only just big name, you know, organizations, but also even just some minor independent ones, which I'm looking through some of the lists. I recognize some of the guys from the independent scene that we worked with and have hung out with in the past.
So it's kind of crazy thinking that they're over. So right now on this website, on cagematch.net,
right. There
are 3,339 known factions that have been around since for quite a while.
Now, also keep in mind, some of these are even just repeat names, but different iterations of the factions. Like, for instance, the Four Horsemen, that they have one run of the original Four Horsemen, and then they have one of the later runs of it, and then they had one of the last iteration runs of the Four Horsemen. So granted, some of the faction names can be repetitive, but different rank times and just different iterations of it. And then there's other ones like, well, let's take, for instance, Bullet Club, which is just, you know, it's still a continuous faction, but it just lists all the people who have been part of it and are currently part of it.
Yes, definitely. So what we're going to be doing tonight for this episode is that Monkey's going to take five factions, and I'm going to take five factions, and we're going to pick them apart and describe which members would be added on, which members would be taken off, or if the faction is just beautiful the way it is. Now, this is not only just factions, but we will be diving into male and female wrestling factions. We will be diving into international factions. And some of the factions you may not know unless if you're wrestling savvy. So if you're a fan of like C-Mill or AAA, New Japan, DDT, NOAH, even some of the American and British pro wrestling promotions out there, we're going to be analyzing some of our favorites. But first,
right,
Monkey.
That's me.
It is Thursday.
It is Thursday.
You know what that means? Yeah.
Ooh, yes, I do.
It means it is time for our favorite Thursday evening segment. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Monkey to discuss his favorite news topics of the evening with Monkey Coconut News.
Welcome to Monkey Coconut News. I'm Monkey. Well, I got a couple things here, and last week we missed last week's recording because we had a prior engagement, and it was a wonderful time watching the production of Clue the Musical in our local area, which was directed by one of our fellow members of the Internet Wonderland here, Miss Sally Stitch. So it was a great time, great show. I won a prize for guessing the proper information. So that was good times. So last week, didn't get a chance to report on the passing of world famous comic book artist George Perez. So many people might remember him for his runs on Wonder Woman, including also being like best known for being one of the massive team artists. Like anytime there was like a Marvel versus DC crossover, he tended to be the one that did a lot of the artwork on it. So that includes like all the members of the Justice League, all the members of the Avengers, all in one cover. That was all him by himself doing all that. So he was a great artist. Many people recognize him, his name, and remember his name. It's very unfortunate that he passed away. I can't remember. Let me see if I can find it here. I want to say he passed away from cancer, but I can't remember the exact specifics. Let's see. Yeah, pancreatic cancer, unfortunately, was what he passed from back on the 6th of the month here. So, again, condolences and thoughts and prayers with his family there. And he was only 67 years old, so very surprising young age for a lot of people who, when he got into comics earlier on in his early days there. Another bit of unfortunate news over the weekend, legendary, I guess you can call him legendary, but best known for his acting as Earl on the Tremors movie series, Fred Ward passed away this past weekend. And he was 79, and they have not said what he passed away from. So that's, again, more unfortunate news, and don't really have a lot of good news right now, but lots of other crazy things going on in the world. Not going to touch on that trial of the century going on because everyone else is talking about it, so if you want information on that, you can always check with other people. They should be up to date on it and give you the bits and pieces of it. Other than the fun line of, you know, jar of dirt.
So, I will touch a little bit on the trial of the century going on, and only by saying this. If you want to see riveting comedy at its finest with everything going on, please tune in to this trial. I have seen a lot of commentary on this thing, and there's a lot of memes that are going to be lasting for a very long time coming from this. So, if you want to see what the hype is all about, please tune in. It's actually on Court TV and a whole bunch of other channels. I, myself, along with Monkey, we really haven't been watching it.
Right.
Because, as Monkey said, a lot of people are already covering it.
I've been kind of keeping tabs on it, but nothing that I can report that hasn't been touched on by like 80 million people already. So,
exactly. It's bad whenever you go to work and the first thing you hear is, hey, have you been watching the trial?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I have this thing called a life.
I mean, don't. I have no life.
But yeah, you still don't watch it.
I watch it, but I just...
Not much.
I don't talk to people about it. It's like, yeah. Well, obviously, you've heard about it. I've heard about it. What else is new?
Oh, the fact that Amber Heard has actually lost her contract with Warner Brothers and she will not be on Aquaman 2.
Well, she's still in there from what she said, but she doesn't know how much because they apparently cut a lot.
Hopefully one scene.
I play for you the tiny violin. Can you hear it? Can you? Oh, shoot. Snapped.
Damn. Anyways, so that's pretty much all we're going to touch on relating to that because,
I think there's this wonderful person that came in the room. She just bashed in the doors like, hi, my name's Karma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. But
carrying on.
I will say that we are Team Depp here, just saying.
I'm Team Me. But yeah.
We got to support Johnny Depp. I mean, yeah, come on.
Well, I will say this much. I love Johnny Depp, you know, but again, as some other people would say, it's not that they're both completely innocent in the situation. There is many problems with both in the situation, but we will say that one of them has been given more of a pass for too long, and now that karma lady came in, so
kicking down the door.
Yep.
All right, so here we go. We're going to deep dive into this wonderful website. Once again, it is cagematch.net. It is a European wrestling site. So definitely shout out to the individuals that run and maintain Cage Match. If you have any questions, always just go to www.cagematch.net and take a look at their content. And mind you, as always, this is not a sponsored ship whatsoever.
Right. Now, if they want to sponsor us, you know, I'll happily take it.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, if they were considering, like, doing something with us, all they have to do is just, you know, go on Facebook and like the group page, Cheshire's Place, Looking Glass and Logical Madness. Email me at CheshireLookingGlass@gmail.com, or they can even message me on Twitter by following me at Place Cheshire.
Yes.
Shameless plug.
Shameless. Very shameless.
I don't care.
Is any one of those wrestlers shameless? And never mind.
I mean, shameless, but not shameless. Close enough. Maybe there was a wrestler named Shameless at one point.
There might have been.
Who knows?
But as a side note, the easiest way to find this list, if you want to look up the list that we went through and many tedious seconds and minutes of us scrolling through it, I did a lovely Google search for wrestling factions, and if you scroll down, there's a on the first page, there's a link there for list of stables hyphen cage match. And you can go to that site, and that's the list there.
Yes, definitely.
So,
all right. So we're going to kick this off with, we'll just say Monkey goes first, then I go.
Okay, sounds like a good plan.
All right. So your first pick, wrestling factions. Who would you add? Who would you subtract? Or is it good as is?
All right. So first one on my list here, and this is the one that actually got me thinking, because I was watching some stuff a couple days ago, and my mind just went, oh, hey, that would be cool. Okay, so the first group I'm going to talk about is the WWE faction Legacy. So as many people remember, Legacy came out in about 2009. They were on until about 2010-ish. And it was Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, and Ted DiBiase Jr. I mean, very decent start. And then obviously they broke them up to push Randy as a single. And Cody and DiBiase were around for a while, and then they floundered some, and then they separated them, and DiBiase just left after a while. And Cody has done Cody stuff, so. But if I was to do anything with that group, I would first add some people. Mainly, first of all, I would start off by adding, before they would have broken up, and possibly even kept them together as a group longer, I would have added Joe Henning, who many people remember as Curtis Axel or Michael McGillicuddy. Everyone, you know, he's the son of Kurt Henning. He has the genes. He has the style. He had the ability. He would have been a great fit in the team. And I think that he could have kept the team going for a little bit longer and even possibly have brought that team to new heights just on name alone. And then also, you know, just the ability that he had at the time. He was kind of just coming out of FCW about 2010, so before they changed it over to NXT. So he would have been a good fit for that team. If they would have stuck around longer, I would have probably added in the Rotunda brothers, you know, who later became Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas, respectively. Because obviously, them two being third-generation wrestlers, the grandkids of Blackjack Mulligan, and then the sons of Mike Rotunda. So that would have been another good addition to the group, making it a strong tag team and then trying to push Cody, Ted DiBiase, and even Joe into singles competition areas. Personally, I would probably have pushed, after Randy would have separated from them at that point, I would have pushed Cody more into the Intercontinental U.S. title picture, and I would have pushed probably Mike and or Joe Henning as the singles world champion, personally. That would have been my picks to do with them.
I like that. And you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Like, I know. across the board, you're actually right. I mean, that stable alone, just with second and third generation wrestlers and, like, really developing them, molding them, that team, that group, could have easily been one of the best things in WWE.
Right. And also keeping in mind, no disrespect to Cody Rhodes, because obviously Cody Rhodes now has obviously matured a lot more, and he's definitely in line for a good world title push currently. But at that point there, even Joe Henning still probably would needed what they would have called some seasoning back then.
Yeah.
But Joe Henning at that point had a little bit more, I would say, more of a feel to him, especially if they would have pushed him right away as the son of Mr. Perfect, as opposed to Mike McGillicuddy, and then, you know, floundering him around for a bit.
Right. I mean, he had the opportunity to have a very prolific career.
Right.
But, you know, WWE booking.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Yep.
Of course, as you said, making sense is illegal. So
it is against the law. I have seen it. I looked through all the legal documents I could, starting off at legaldrip.com. And in there, the first line is, if it makes sense, it is against the law. If you know anyone trying to make sense, please report them to the police.
Exactly.
And by police, we mean the Gestapo.
Anyways, so my first pick is actually a promotion from New Japan Wrestling that ran from 2004 to 2007, and it is the Control Terror Unit. So for those that have been fans of Jushin Thunder Liger, this is around the time that he was actually doing his heel turn. Mm-hmm. So this team consisted of Jushin Thunder Liger, also known as Mass CTUL. Now the initial members that I'm going to be naming off first, they all had a masked persona with the CTU. Now, granted, the CTU did actually wrestle in the U.S. for a little bit, too, in cross-promotional events. But continuing on, there's Jado, a.k.a. Mass CTU-J, Ghetto, a.k.a. Mass CTU-G, Minoru, or as most people know him as Minoru Tanaka, also known as either CTU-M, or Mass CTU-T. Then there was Hiroki Goto. He was also known as Mass CTU-H. Now, this team also had in it Prince Devitt, as we know now as Finn Balor in the WWE. Also, for those who have been around for a while and do watch New Japan, but really don't mess with WWE, Prince Devitt was the original founder of Bullet Club. Then Kakushi Takamura, Dick Togo, which people should know Dick Togo.
Yeah, from Kaientai back in the day.
Not only that, but he had a very long career in Pro Wrestling Noah and New Japan for a while.
That's if they watch Japanese wrestling.
Again. Right.
But if you've only seen U.S. stuff, you would know from Kaientai.
Yes. And the final individual was Mass CTU-MZ, which they don't give a real name for that individual, but I'm about to find out who it is.
It was Joe.
Nope, Super Strong Machine.
Super Strong.
Also known as Black Strong Machine, Junji Hirata, Makai number 1, Sunny 2 Rivers, Strong Machine 1, Super Love Machine, and also, as we know him as right now, Mass CTU-MZ. Now, this team is already stacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just with the initial members that I named off. I mean, these are all legacy wrestlers in Japan. If you've seen DDT Wrestling, All Japan Pro Wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Noah, even they made appearances in Smash, they made appearances in Hustle, you already know that these individuals are amazing. Then, of course, you add in Prince Devitt, Takamura, Dick Togo, and just CTU-MZ. I would still keep all these individuals, quite honestly, but I would add in Ultimo Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ultimo Dragon, like, he's had his heel and face runs. He's been part of stables before, but I think he would accentuate this team, mainly due to the fact of his athleticism during this time, and this is around the time of his prime. So I think he would make a good addition to this, and if I had to take someone out, honestly, I'll take out Prince Devitt. Because this is around the time that he was still fairly fresh in the Japanese pro wrestling circuit. And he already had he had exposures in other stables during the time. So honestly, this wouldn't hurt his career being taken out of this stable. But I think Ultimo Dragon would be a good replacement for Prince Devitt. All right, Monkey.
Sounds fair. All right, so my next group I'm going to talk about here, I just had them a second ago. So I'm going to go with the Wyatt family, and I'm talking about the one of the last iterations, basically where Bray Wyatt, Eric Rowe, and Luke Harper, and then at that point, it was after Strowman kind of broke off and was doing a single thing. Actually, at this point, I think it was they broke up Bray Wyatt and them from all together. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about late 2017, early 2018-ish. I would say at this point here, when it was Bray Wyatt, kind of just floundering before he came out doing the Fiend stuff, I would have to say I would make a new iteration of the Wyatt family right then and there. And at this point here, and you might think I'm double dipping because I'm going to pull in some people I already talked about, but I would say this would have been a perfect time, because since they weren't doing anything with them, to reform the Wyatt family with Bray and throw in Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel at that point. Because at that point there, they would have been a fresh stable. At that point, it was they had the B team kind of running around and doing nothing. And half the time, you didn't even see him doing anything. Heck, even before Bo Dallas' release, it was like over a year since he even had a match anywhere. They just had him under contract, and he was just kind of there. So this would have been a good time for him to do something with them, recreate the Wyatt family, keeping Bray in charge, and then, you know, remolding Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas. Again, Bo Dallas at this point here could have gone full heel, get off of that kind of goofy streak of him playing the kind of trying to be a, you know, encouraging role model type character, and just have him go full heel. And, you know, Curtis Axel, again, him being kind of goofy at this point as well, him going full heel as well, even kind of making them like a darker version of what they've been. Like, you know, Bo Dallas could still be kind of doing a taunting role model thing while he's, you know, bashing them down onto the ground. Curtis Axel, you know, laying in the double axe handle smashes like his grandfather, and then breaking out, you know, the fisherman suplex like his dad. You know, it would work out very perfectly, and it would be a good 3-man group that they could have used and even molded more into a new Wyatt family. Even them changing their names to, you know, just giving them a different name just to different accentuate from their characters. Like Bo Dallas could become Bo Wyatt, you know, and Curtis Axel, even have him take the Wyatt last name as well. You know, call him Axe Wyatt or something. That would have been a great fit for that group. And, you know, again, the other thing being that, you know, they're all third generation wrestlers, so they all will fit just perfectly together in that group. At least that's what I would say personally.
See, I do agree with that. They both Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel were greatly underutilized.
Exactly. They actually even stopped using Curtis Axel for so long that's when he actually ended up getting released, is he just asked for his release, and they were like, yeah, okay, we ain't doing nothing, anybody. See ya.
You know, and once again, it's a shame that they're underutilized.
Right.
Because they would have been amazing if they would have had more TV time, more mm-hmm. exposure, you know, to really flesh out the characters. Now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Them as the B team, as a tag team, was actually hilarious.
It was, but then after a while, they stopped using them and just didn't do anything with them, and it's kind of was like, yeah.
Like, for a while, I didn't even know that Bo Dallas was still under contract.
Yeah, he had the JTJ thing going on where, you know, it's like, he's still here?
Exactly.
Like, we didn't let him go yet, pal? What's going on here?
No, Vince, we haven't let him go yet. Oh, sorry.
I thought that was Shelton. What the hell?
Anyways. Which I actually do have one stable that has Shelton, but I'll touch on that later.
Okay. But I actually do too, actually.
Really?
Yeah. It might be the same one, maybe.
Maybe. We'll find out in a minute. But I'm actually going to touch on an old school stable. Not really a stable, but more of a family.
Oh.
I have to touch on the Heenan family.
Why are you touching them? Andre doesn't like you touching them.
Not in that sense.
Go, my family.
No. So, the Heenan family, and this is a list of legends and Hall of Famers. So, starting off with Bobby the Brain Heenan. Of course, he is the reason why we have the Heenan family.
Mm-hmm. Which, for all those who weren't aware of back in the day, 99% of the time, whenever they brought in a new heel, they put him with a manager just for someone to talk for them until they can get themselves established. And obviously in, I want to say AWA area, Minnesota, yeah, which is where Heenan was from initially, a lot of them went to Bobby Heenan. And so that's when all these heels would come in. And so Heenan just started basically stockpiling them up and had the Heenan family.
Yeah. I mean, if you take a look at the long scheme of managers, he had the biggest stable. I mean, Classy Freddie Blassie had a decent stable.
Right.
The Grand Wizard had a decent stable. Slick Johnson had a decent stable.
He managed the greatest wrestler of all.
Akeem the African Dream.
Damn right.
We'll be touching on that one in season 5. Anyways.
He's on our black wrestlers.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we got to touch on him. He's honorary. But anyways, Bobby Heenan, Adrian Adonis, Andre the Giant, Arn Anderson, Big John Studd, Buddy Rose, Haku, Hercules, High Chief Offie, or Sylvie Offie, Jesse Ventura, Ken Patera, King Harley Race, King Kong Bundy, Mr. Perfect, Paul Orndorff, Ric Flair, Rick Rude, Tama the Barbarian, the Brooklyn Brawler, the Missing Link, the Red Rooster, and Tully Blanchard. Now, this stable did run from 1984 and 1992. And now, you have to remember, this was a revolving door of talent.
Right.
Because it may have started in AWA or whatever promotion. But once it made it to WWF,
right,
that's when you got to see a lot of variety. Now, the one thing is, because this is a revolving door of talent.
Right.
And we know that Heenan really, like, he managed for quite a while, Andre, Big John Studd, Haku, Hercules, Ken Patera for a while, King Kong Bundy, Paul Orndorff, the Barbarian. Now, if I was to change things up, and this is from the WWF perspective,
right,
I would keep Andre.
Mm-hmm.
I would keep John Studd. I would keep Haku and Hercules. I would keep King Kong Bundy, but I would also keep Harley Race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Barbarian, yeah, that's a keep. I mean, if you have Haku, you have to have the Barbarian.
Yes, the two Tonga boys you have to keep together, because that was the greatest mistake they made, was separating them.
Yeah, really was. Now, in relation to some of these other individuals, Adrian Adonis,
right,
good wrestler on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, his gimmicks, he went from hardcore leather daddy to glimmed up fanboy before that was even a thing. He really took a page from the Exoticos page from Lucha Libre, and he made it work for him. He didn't really need a mouthpiece because he was able to get himself over as a heel. Arn Anderson, I mean, that's four horsemen. That's four horsemen. You don't...
Well, you got to realize, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, this is when they came in as the... Oh, God, what the hell are they?
I know what...
The Brainbusters.
Yep. So that's understandable.
They came in with Bobby Heenan because, obviously, they've known Bobby Heenan from classic days on the time independent circuit.
Yeah.
NWA circuit, obviously.
Like, my thing is, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, they could have worked well with, like, Freddie Blassie.
Right.
You know, that could have been a quick fix, honestly. Harley Race, oof. Like, I want to keep Harley. Definitely want to keep Harley, but at the same time, Harley is old school. He really didn't need a mouthpiece. But I'll definitely keep Harley.
Right.
Brooklyn Brawler, I would have to omit him.
Right. And again, Brooklyn Brawler, I think, was more or less just there because they needed a fall guy for the group.
Yeah.
More or less.
I mean, they have the Missing Link and Red Rooster. Come on. How many more fall guys do they really need? Granted, you know, if they would have changed the Red Rooster's character,
right,
and made it something a little more fitting for the Heenan family, I would say keep him, but his persona didn't work for me. So it doesn't make sense to have him in the Heenan family. Same with the Missing Link.
Well, the thing with Red Rooster was, you know, he was a great wrestler on the independent circuit before. Terry Taylor was great in NWA. And, again, this is one of those, Vince didn't get him, so Vince did something weird.
Yeah. Thank you, Vince.
Yes. Like, that's good shit, pal.
That wasn't good shit.
Just look good on me.
Yeah, it's only because it's making you money, Vince.
Damn right. Everybody wants a mohawk. It's great. Red Mohawk, Rooster. That makes perfect sense.
And this is coming from the man that created the gobbledygooker. Anyways, so, anyways, Monkey, it's your turn, man.
All right. So, since we talked about it a little bit earlier, I'm going to go with it. And maybe this is one that you're kind of thinking of, so I might be stealing one of yours. But I'm going a little bit more modern age again here. But I'm going to talk about the Hurt Business. So, you know, the Hurt Business, when it was MVP, Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and Cedric Alexander. Now, what I would have done with this group, that core group right there, pretty excellent. You had a basic, you got your heavy hitter, you got Bobby Lashley, who's your main eventer. MVP was more or less the manager, or as Jim Cornette might call him, the player coach. So he was, you know, in charge of them, but he could still kind of go if they needed him to, but he wasn't supposed to be a main thing, anything.
Right.
You had Cedric and Shelton as the tag team. I would add one more member to him to be their mid-card guy, and that would have been Apollo Crews. Because, again, Apollo Crews, very talented, again. And he's doing the Nigerian Prince gimmick right now, but still, I would say he would have fit in perfectly with this group, especially since he was kind of doing that, you know, Nigerian Prince. Big money. This is, well, not to sound kind of on the racial side, but this is like the Black Four Horsemen, basically. They're styling, they're profiling, and they can go. And that would have been, Apollo Crews would fit perfectly in there. No Commander Aziz, just Apollo Crews sliding in there.
You know what? I like that.
And that's why I would say this would have been a perfect fit for that group. And that was one thing that a lot of people were talking about, was in the talks for a while, but then it just kind of petered off. And he just went running around with Commander Aziz, and now we never see him really anymore.
Like, honestly, I hate the Nigerian Prince gimmick. Now, granted, yes, it is playing into his, you know, right, family background and everything, his heritage, his pride, mm-hmm. But WWE doesn't exactly have the most stellar track record of handling gimmicks from other regions?
Culture.
We'll go with culture.
When you talk about it, Mexico's the greatest team ever.
Jesus Christ.
No, I'm Monkey, but thanks for asking. But yeah, again, like I said, Apollo Crews would fit in there. Even if he dropped the Nigerian Prince gimmick, but still kept the I'm Nigerian Prince, I am royalty, I'm rich, I have money, I'm better than you, and I can out-wrestle you.
See, that I would agree. So that part would be nice, but he needs to drop the accent.
You don't like that? And now I will do this because I am of Nigerian royalty. My father was Uha, and we did this.
Honestly, it just sounds more like, and now you shall have the power of the Black Panther stripped away.
And now we will take the power from you. And now I sound French. Oui, baguette.
Anyways. Okay. No, the team that I was thinking about, the stable I was thinking about, because I just found this, and it's interesting, because I didn't know Shelton was part of this, and this is going back to New Japan, and it's Suzuki Gun, Yeah, Minoru Suzuki, Taka Michinoku, Taichi, Lance Archer, David Boy Smith Jr., Shelton Benjamin, Takashi, I can't even say that last name.
Oh my god, you're killing me, Smalls.
Mizuka, El Desperado, Yoshinobu, Kamaru, Zack Sabre Jr., Doki, Kingo, Mashimo, Black Tiger, and Takashi Segura. I did not know Shelton was part of this. I feel kind of sad.
Now, this could be a possibility because during about this time, 2011, I think it was during, they were kind of doing the interim stuff with Ring of Honor, and I believe Shelton Benjamin was part of Ring of Honor at that point, around there. So that would probably be where he got flexed into the group.
Now, this is one of those cases that, once again, revolving door talent.
Right.
And quite a few individuals like Minoru Suzuki, Takumi Shinoku, Taichi, Zack Sabre Jr., Doki, Black Tiger, and whichever iteration it is right. at this point. Legendary. Like staples of Japanese wrestling. The question is, who would I take out? Or actually, who would I add in?
That's a good question. Who would you add in?
So this is the thing, because this is already one of those, like, strong groups.
Right.
And we already know that Trent Beretta is part of Suzuki Gun.
He's part of Chaos.
Chaos? Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Trent and Rocky Romero and all of the Best Friends Club get-along gang.
What's left of them?
As Jim Cornette would call them, the get-along gang.
So, who I would add in this, and this is more of an American wrestler,
mm-hmm.
if he wasn't on contract with WWE at this point. Because if you have Shelton,
right.
and say, for instance, you didn't have Shelton.
Right.
And this is stealing a little bit from the Hurt Business. Throw in Cedric Alexander. Because he definitely needs that international exposure more. He's a strong talent. He is very gifted in the ring. He has strong athleticism. He's very innovative with his moves. I think a tour in Japan would do him wonders for additional seasoning. So he would be the one I would add in. Now, if I didn't add him in, I'm going to choose another individual that is a staple of Japanese wrestling, but not only that, wrestling in the States.
Right.
Low key.
That would be very good fit in there.
Because low key has wrestled in Japanese stables and for Japanese promotions before. And he does exude that hard-hitting Japanese strong style.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, he has put some people in the hospital.
Yeah, true, true.
You know, but in Japan, they hit hard.
Yeah.
So this would be right up his alley. And he is a time-honored veteran. He's been doing this for, God, how long? Yeah.
Low-key's been around for at least a good 20, 30 years.
Yep.
Because he was in WWE for a little bit. Second season of NXT, yep. when it was the quote-unquote reality show, competition show.
Yep, as Caval the World Warrior.
Yep, because they couldn't call him Loki.
Then, of course, he wrestled in TNA.
Yep.
He's wrestled in PWG, Ring of Honor. He's one of the founding fathers of Ring of Honor.
Right.
He's wrestled in a lot of places around the world. So for him to be part of Suzuki Gun would be phenomenal.
I can see it happening. Either that or Chaos. But, you know,
Chaos, yeah.
So
I wouldn't say Bullet Club, though.
No, not Bullet Club. No. Well, Bullet Club is kind of goofy, because Bullet Club was initially the quote-unquote gaijin group. And they were meant to be the gaijin heel group. And by gaijin, I just mean foreigners, basically non-Japanese born.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why Bad Luck Fall and Tama Tonga and them all joined it, because, you know, they're not quote-unquote you're what people would consider gaijin when people think gaijin, but
yeah,
they're foreigners still.
Exactly. So I'd definitely say Low-key or Cedric Alexander. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't take anyone out of this whatsoever,
right.
because it's a good lineup.
Yeah, they mesh pretty good, and again, it is known to be a hard-hitting group.
Definitely. All right, Monkey, so this is your number four, if I remember correctly.
Something around those lines. Okay. Well, this one, and it's just because I got to do the representing here for with my awesome coat on. Let me get my coat on.
Yep. Go ahead. Put it on.
Yeah.
Put it on.
Now cut your cheek, so you have to look in the mirror every day. So, in case you weren't knowing, I'm talking about the Blackpool Combat Club.
Hell yeah!
So, as we all know, the current group. Is Regal, Moxley, Brian Danielson, and Wheeler Yuta. Now, with the little thing that happened last night, I don't consider that to be an add-on to the group. They're just kind of I guess you would say friends of friends.
Well, basically. Wait. Because, you know, there are some people that are not into what AEW does. So you have to let them know what happened last night on Dynamite. I know.
We're getting another football. No, we're not. Okay. Anyway, so Jericho Appreciation Society, they basically set up for basically what's going to be a blood and guts match or just a hardcore 10-man tag match with Danielson and Moxley teaming up with Santana, Ortiz, and Eddie Kingston against the Jericho Appreciation Society at Double or Nothing, Nothing Doubled. And on that note there, like I said, I don't count those three, Ortiz, Santana, and Eddie Kingston as being part of the group. I mean, no disrespect to them. They're all pretty solid workers, but I don't think they fully fit into the Black Bull Combat Club, which you look at them more as a, I would say, more trained and refined group. Now, Moxley is kind of a little rough around the edges still, technically, but, you know, you get the with the wrestling with Yuta and Danielson. So, with that, I would add in Lee Moriarty, because I feel he would be a perfect fit for them. I mean, he's got that New Japan-style build to him. He can obviously work really good. He has a lot of technical skill. And he would probably fit in best with them out of everyone that's currently on the AEW roster, I would say.
Yeah, I do agree with that one, too. So, I do agree with that one.
And outside that, I wouldn't take anyone out because obviously they work perfectly good. It's just a perfect build right there.
Now, I know that we discussed this one in great lengths. Aside from Lee Moriarty, who else would you add?
Ooh, that one I had a thought earlier, and I think I forgot what it was.
Daniel Garcia, remember?
Oh, yes, Daniel Garcia. How dare you put words in my mouth? Well, yes, Daniel Garcia, I think, would also fit in pretty well in there, but obviously he needs a little more more promo work, I would say, but him being technically wise, he is very sound. Some people might think, oh, he's part of Jericho Appreciation Society. Yeah, he is, but he's only part of them because he really has no promo skills, and that's the reason why he's part of them. But
right.
If you actually watch him work, he is very solid, and that's his only problem is he doesn't have any promo ability. He can play the I'm the backup, I'm the hype man afterwards, but he really can't do anything outside of that promo-wise, at least not that I've seen.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But with the right tutelage, I would say under Regal, he can hone his craft a little bit more and then hone his promo abilities even more. To the point of where he would be a solid fighting machine.
Amen.
Yes, definitely.
So, I'm going to caveat on this one.
How dare you take caveats on my bowl? Okay.
So, the reason why is because, you know, Lee Moriarty, right. Yes. Daniel Garcia, yes. Mm-hmm. But what about Ricky Starks? Because Ricky Starks has talent. Mm. He has the ability.
I would say Ricky Starks has the ability. But the one thing that sets him outside of what I would call Blackpool Combat Club
is that he wears pearls. I mean, what?
No, not even that. He showboats a lot. Mm-hmm. But not during, like, not like Danielson, who will showboat while he'll bicep flex while he's got someone in a bicep. No, Ricky Starks will hit someone and then pose.
Which, you know, that...
That's the only thing that's hurting him from becoming a perfect add-on to the Black Bull Combat Club, right. I'd say. I mean, he's obviously got a good talent. He's got great promo ability, obviously. But that's the only thing that would set him outside of what I would call Black Bull Combat Club.
Right. Now, granted, we could go on and on about Blackpool Combat Club.
Because we know they're the best.
Exactly.
Of the best.
I mean, we could easily go through this entire list. Mm-hmm. Of individuals, of stables, and pick individuals that would be fantastic in BBC. Oh, sorry. Ooh, wrong show. Whoa, BCC.
Whoa. No. BCC. We are not the British Broadcasting Club. We are the Blackpool Combat Club. Okay.
All right, here we go. So, the next stable that I'm going to talk about, and this is another throwback, old school stable. Mm-hmm. whenever you think stable, you have to think of this group because it is wrestling royalty. The names are synonymous with pride, with great matches, and with Hall of Famers. So you have to talk about the Four Horsemen.
Right.
And the iteration of the Four Horsemen I am talking about is the original. Excuse me, what? So I am talking about Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and of course, J.J. Dillon being their manager.
Right.
Now, as I said, every individual on here, legendary.
Legendary.
Yeah. Every individual on here, Hall of Famer, multiple times over. These five men are the epitome of a well-oiled wrestling machine. And during this time, they're active from 86 to 87. And there have been different iterations. I mean, we can talk about iterations with Luger.
Right.
With Mongo McMichaels, with Chris Benoit, with Jeff Jarrett. You know, we can talk about all that. But if it wasn't for these five core individuals, we would not have the Four Horsemen.
Right.
We would not have legendary matches as we've had. Now, would I add anyone into the Four Horsemen? And especially this iteration. I would add Harley Race to it. But in order to add Harley, I have to take someone out. Mm-hmm. Now, Ric Flair, we know Ric Flair.
Right. He wouldn't.
We know Arn Anderson, the enforcer. Even Tully Blanchard has had a long stoic career. The one individual that was pretty much lost in the shuffle during this time was Ollie.
Yeah, Ollie Anderson.
So, Ollie, I apologize, but in order to make this iteration of the Four Horsemen with Harley Race, we would have to take you out and put Harley in, because that would elevate this faction, this stable, to new heights. Now, granted, during the time, Harley and Rick they worked together.
Yeah.
They didn't really like each other. They worked together.
They were there.
That's the best way to put it. They were there. Whenever it came to professionalism, whatever they do in the ring is what they do in the ring. Outside the ring, they really didn't hang out too much. Yeah. So,
well, I think it kind of fell under the thing of Harley and Rick kind of both had the same plans after the shows, and one would get in the other one's way, I think.
Yeah. Now, granted, if I didn't add in Harley Race, I would have to add in the man that was a mentor to Ric Flair during his early years in NWA.
Bobby
and that Hinn? No, not Bobby. Because before Ric Flair was like the NWA champion and everything, he learned under Rip Hawk. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know who Rip Hawk is, he was a long time wrestler. He's wrestled around the world, US, Canada, Mexico, Japan. For those who knew him personally, like myself, my mom, and a lot of wrestlers that he trained, he was Rip Evers. So having someone like Rip Hawk in the Four Horsemen, that would boost it up too, because Ric Flair learned a lot of the styling and profiling from Rip Hawk. And you can tell, like, whenever he first came into NWA, he was just the pretty boy dressed as a hippie, but once he started really working with Rip, that's when he started really adopting the suits, smoking cigars, having the women around. That was Rip's influence on him.
Right.
So those would be my two two choices to add in. All right, Monkey, so you're number five.
All right, I'm going to take a little dive back into the past here. Not that far back as you went, but this is in the Great Fall era of WCW.
Oh, here we go.
So this is a group that actually I really enjoyed watching at the time, and I think they had a lot of potential when they came in and when they set them all up, because they were all actually trained by WCW at the time. And this was the Natural Born Thrillers, which was Chuck Palumbo, Mark Jindrak, Mike Sanders, Sean O'Hare, Sean Stasiak, Reno, and Johnny the Bull were all associated as being part of the Natural Born Thrillers. Now, at the time, obviously, Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo were the main tag team of the group, and then Mike Sanders was kind of like the ringleader, it was Jindrak and O'Hare were the tag team, and Palumbo was kind of like one of their power group guys. Johnny the Bull and Reno were kind of thrown in there kind of weird, because I think Johnny the Bull kind of shuffled in from the Mama Lukes.
Yeah.
But Reno was kind of a weird add-on later on. But if I were to tweak this group, I would have kept what I consider the main four and dropped everyone else. Even though everyone else is pretty talented, Sean Stasiak, Masoso, he is, you know, I believe he's a second generation wrestler. He was trained pretty good by Dory Funk and Tom Pritchard. So
yeah, so Sean Stasiak is a second generation wrestler.
Yes, but so anyway, so outside of that, he would fit in pretty okay-ish, but he didn't really fit in with this group, because this group was kind of, when I look at it, I look at them as, at that time, the new Four Horsemen is what I looked at them as.
Right.
So Chuck Palumbo, Mark Jindrak, Mike Sanders, and Sean O'Hare were the core of that group. Anyone else was kind of just thrown in there as part of the group until they flexed them in a little bit more in and out, and then WCW fell apart and got bought by WWE. But that would be the four core ones I would keep. Sean O'Hare, mountain of potential. He had height, he had size, and he was athletic as all hell.
Yes.
He had interesting, his promos needed some work back then. He did get some great promos in WWE before they dropped that gimmick that he was doing, where he was doing the Devil's Advocate gimmick.
So, before you go on to that, I have to say, I actually love that gimmick.
Yeah, I love that gimmick too, but
it was perfect.
And then they dropped it, and then he unfortunately started getting some mental health issues and then got into drug abuse and put on a whole lot of weight before other things happened. And yeah, but again, at that time though, going back to this time during the prime time of him, that is why he was a perfect fit in there. Mark Jindrak, again, kind of a big guy also. Not so much to him, unfortunately. He was what Jim Cornette would call your pale, fleshy white meat is what he looked like, but he still had potential. I mean, actually, if you even look at some of his last stuff that he started doing, like about 5-10 years ago, where he was a Mark Corleone,
yeah,
I believe, in the AAA. I mean, he's obviously improved some, but you know, never really got back to anything mainstream in the U.S. at least.
Right.
Chuck Palumbo, obviously, later on became part of the Billy and Chuck team, which, yeah, not very good sensitive-wise gimmick these days, but
those were different days for a different time.
But you can tell he had talent.
Yes.
Again, talent and size, everything that makes Vince McMahon go, perfect.
But have you seen Chuck as of late?
I believe he has a motorcycle shop now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he actually owns a company that makes customized motorcycles, and the dude is still jacked.
Yeah, obviously.
I wish he would actually come back for a one-off and just one in any promotion, just one time, because he was he was an amazing wrestler. Right.
Yeah, definitely. And again, he had the look, obviously, that Vince McMahon loved for wrestlers. He was big. He had ability. Yeah, his talking was kind of, his promos were kind of blah, but that's what Mike Sanders was there for.
Right.
Mike Sanders was, again, his gimmick was above average, Mike Sanders. And that's what, he was the shortest guy of the group. He wasn't as bulky, But you can tell he had the actual ability, wrestling ability. Exactly. And he had the promo ability, which is what those other guys in the group really didn't have.
Right. And I fully agree.
And that would have been what I would have kept as Natural Born Thrillers, was those core four. Again, like I said, Johnny the Bull, Reno, Sean Stasiak, all great in their own respects, but they didn't really fit with this group.
Right.
Those four there that I kept, Palumbo, Jindrak, O'Hare, and Sanders, they were essentially, like I said, the new four horsemen is what they look like to me.
Exactly.
And that's what I would have kept.
All right, so my final pick, this is actually a stable from TNA.
Oh, God. Okay.
And mind you, we haven't really, we touched on international, we touched on old school, we touched on a little bit of new school, but we haven't shown the ladies any love yet.
Uh-huh.
So I have to go with the Beautiful People. And this is the original iteration of the three women group with Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, and Madison Rain.
Right.
Now, this group right here, I would keep.
Right.
Now, granted, when Madison Rain left and she was going with her singles run and everything, and then, of course, the injuries and the time off, they did have Lacey Von Erich in the group. Mm-hmm. And that I would like to wipe from all record. Because, no offense to Lacey, you know, just because you have the Von Erich last name doesn't mean that you have the talent of the Von Erichs.
Well, I would say this much for her. Unfortunately, she suffered from the unfortunateness of her dad really kind of went away before she could really learn anything from him.
Right, which and is true.
The unfortunate circumstances. I think if, you know, if Carrie hadn't did what he did, she probably would have learned a little bit more. And
right.
Probably been a little bit more respectful to the business as opposed to what she currently apparently does at wrestling conventions and going around and basically saying, oh, you work for WWE? Well, you should thank my parents, my family for it, because my family is what made WWE to say. And they're all dead.
Yeah. Like, yeah. See, I can't believe I'm about to go into this, yeah. But if you are a second or third generation wrestler, you know, yes, your family's blood, sweat, and tears went into a promotion. But countless others did as well. Right. Now, if your family started a promotion and they built it from the ground up and made it into a huge, you know, business, then I would understand that to a certain extent. And what I mean by certain is do not gloat about it.
Right.
Because one thing in the business is being humble. Now,
and if you're not humble, Sheiky Baby will talk to you.
Yes.
He'll break your back and make you humble.
But being humble, having humility, you know, giving thanks to everybody that works for you. That is what makes a wrestling promotion a family. Now, yeah, Lacey is somewhat, what's the word I'm looking for on this one? Because I don't really want to say anything negative about her. I'll go with jaded.
Jaded and entitled.
Yes.
Together. She's J-titled.
J-titled. Yeah, we can go with that. But she has to learn respect. Because, yes, her family was part of WWF, WWE, but they were also part of WCW. They were part of...
Well, they were WCCW, World Class Championship. Obviously, that's the Von Erich family.
Wrestling. Yeah. So, it's just one of those things that just show respect to the business overall. You know, yes, her father did pass away early. But there could have been others, friends of the family that were still in the business that could have took her under their wing
right.
And showed her everything that she needed to know. You know, yeah, she mainly got on because of the last name and her looks,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm not going to touch on her looks because that would be extremely shallow of me. That would be for season 5, maybe.
Maybe.
But anyways, Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, and Madison Rain, the Beautiful People, was a very wonderful group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was the dollhouse before the dollhouse. It was Team Bad before Team Bad. Now, would I add someone into this? Now, that's the big thing, because the chemistry with these three made sense. Right. You know, the bad girls.
They were the bad entitled girls, basically, is what the group was. And that's kind of why, I guess, Lacey fit into him later, but Lacey just didn't have the right attitude. Yes, she was entitled, but not the entitled, but kind of, you know, I'm being entitled because I'm trying to be a heel, as opposed to I'm just entitled because I'm entitled.
Now, if I had to add someone into this, ooh, this is going to be a tough one. Mm-hmm. Like, quite honestly, this is going to be a tough one. If I had the opportunity, and this would be more of a remake for this individual if they were in TNA during the time, Candice LeRae, because of wrestling talent. Now, the thing is about Candice, yes, she's, for most of her career leading up to NXT, she was always the goody two-shoes.
Right.
She was always, like, the popular wrestler. But seeing her as the Poison Pixie in NXT before NXT 2.0.
God.
I'm going to need to wash my mouth out after saying that.
You love that?
I hate it. I despise it. It's almost like how you despise pickles.
Yes, pickles are horrendous.
That's your opinion. But anyways, I would add Candice LeRae in because it'd be an interesting group with her in there being the Poison Pixie. You know, if the group was still running today.
Right.
So I could see that working. So I definitely like to go with that.
Interesting.
All right. So now this is the segment that I've been anticipating.
Let's talk about some WTF factions.
Yeah, so these are factions that we never heard of. Now, mind you, in the 3,339 factions that are on here, or stables, there are some very interesting named ones.
Now, we'll keep in mind, some of these are just like, okay, this was obviously a joke, and then some of them are like, wow, that is a hell of a group. Why have I never heard of this group?
Yeah. Now, there are some that you may have heard of. Right. And I say may very loosely. Because some of these I never heard of and Monkey's never heard of.
Yeah, and one of them, well, it's probably because it probably wasn't as well seen in the U.S., I guess you can say.
Yep.
So.
So, Monkey, I'm going to let you kick this one off.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start off with one of them that I saw on this list, and I was like, damn, that's a hell of a group. And it only lasted for maybe a year, because it was only around for in 1989. And I assumed this was during the infancy of WCW, and because it was NWA into WCW time, and this was kind of probably when they had their exchange talent with New Japan at the time. So this group was called the Yamazaki Corporation. Now, just listen to the names on this list and tell me how this team was not on anyone's radar. You got Hiro Matsuda, Barry Windham, Butch Reed, Kendall Windham, Michael Hayes, and Ric Flair.
See,
how is this group not on anyone's radar?
See, that is such a sexy team.
Now, maybe it was a one-off time that they were grouped up together, but I have heard nothing of this group until I just saw them in this list. And I was like...
And see, this is the thing, like, remembering all the WCW that I've watched, they were never on as an actual stable, if I remember correctly.
Now the only thing I can see is, because it sounds like it might be a weird combination of Four Horsemen and another group, but even at that point, it's still... Because Ric Flair, Barry Windham were part of the Four Horsemen around this time. Kendall Windham, obviously, is the younger brother of Barry Windham. But the rest of the group, you know, Michael Hayes, Michael P.S. Hayes being part of the Fabulous Freebirds, Butch Reed being part of Doom, and, you know, Hiro Matsuda, I'm not familiar with that name, unfortunately. Let me just pull up the information.
Now, see, I'm wondering if, because, you know, WCW was doing a lot of international stuff with New Japan. maybe this was a group that was a one-off due to the fact that they were doing that cross-promotion with New Japan. So that's something that we have to think of.
And as a quick side note about Hiro Matsuda, trained by Carl Gotch and Riki Dozen.
Oh, God.
So you know this guy was a beast.
I just had a joygasm. You mentioned the god of catch-style wrestling. Yes. So, wow. I may need to change my pants off that one, just saying.
Yeah. So, again, this team was just, on paper, sounds phenomenal. I mean, if I was still doing our ad and minus to this group, the only person I would have flexed out of this group would have been Kendall Windham. Because he is essentially the runt of this group. He was the younger brother of Barry Windham. Remembering Kendall Windham in WCW later, he was a little bit smaller than the rest of this group. His name really didn't have any pull other than being a Windham.
Right.
But everyone else in this group, just all pull.
It's amazing. It's like, God, I wish they would have had this on TV.
Yeah. And it's, yeah.
Like.
This is like Blackpool Combat Club before Blackpool Combat Club.
No kidding. It's a list of legends, heavy hitters. You know, if you see these individuals in the ring, someone's going to get jacked up.
Yeah.
So, yes, 1,000 times yes, I wish this was on TV.
I'm going to have to look up tape and see what they were like, so I'm going to have to do. But
yeah,
that's a little bit something later.
Yeah, we'll probably do it after the show. But now I have to touch on one that really caught my attention. This stable's name is Team America. Now, Monkey's laughing due to the fact that when I mention these names, it somewhat scratches my head. Now, this team ran from 2007 to 2008 in Ohio Valley Wrestling. Now, I don't know if this is pre or post Jim Cornette being there, but the members of this stable is Michael W. Kruel, Rocha, Vladimir Kozlov, the Belgium Brawler, and Tony Pulaski, Mr. Strongco, Boris Alexeev, Raul, Ramon, Ali Akbar, and Omar Akbar. So, ladies and gentlemen of Internet Wonderland and everyone listening to my melodious voice on the digital airwaves, please, if you're scratching your head like I am, help me make sense of this one. I understand that America is the land of opportunity, the land of milk and honey, and we are an international melting pot. But not one of these individuals, unless if all of them were coming out waving Old Glory and playing the Team America theme song in the background, I do not know how this makes Team America. But I find it hilarious. I really do. You know what? I bet this was actually post-Jim Cornette. Because it just seems like something that someone in WWE at the time, seeing how OVW was an enhancement talent location, would do.
Let me find out. Let me find out.
Yeah, matter of fact, this sounds like something that John Laurinaitis would actually do. While Monkey does the research on this, I do want to say that season 4 is beginning to wrap up, and next Thursday is actually going to be our final episode of the season. We will be taking a small little hiatus and coming back in July with new content, new topics to ponder, new interviews to listen to, and of course, all that geeky, geeky flavor that we love to do on Thursday evenings.
Which we might shift over to.
Yes, I do have to mention that we may actually shift dates. Now, I haven't decided on what the dates are going to be. We may still keep it Tuesday, Thursday. We may do like a Thursday, Saturday. I haven't decided yet. That's why we're taking a small hiatus, not only to figure out new topics and new things to talk about, but also to figure out how this is going to play in the grand scheme of our scheduling. Now, we could do back-to-backs like a Friday, Saturday, but sometimes we do like to enjoy our weekends. And also for pay-per-views, for, Jesus Christ, I'm going to have to wash my mouth out for this one too, for live premium events from Peacock with WWE. Then, of course, we do like to have our own personal lives. We like to take trips. We like to spend time with people that we love and care about. We like, well, okay, I like to go to the gym. Monkey likes to eat.
I like tacos.
I do too.
And they're cheap.
Yes, they are. But anyways, did you find anything yet, Monkey?
Yes.
All right, what we got?
So, yeah, OVW at that point was under the Laurinaitis rule, obviously.
Jesus Christ, I was right.
No, I'm Monkey, but okay.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, because it was at about that point, 2005 was about the last time when Cornette was in OVW. And then in 2006, he was working at TNA. So yeah, he had nothing to do with the wonderful Team America stable of the non-Americans Team America. Or maybe the melting pot of the American Immigrants Team America.
Thank you, Johnny Ace, for just hodgepodging the hell out of this team. All right, Monkey, your turn.
All right. Well, this one I saw and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest stable ever. Obviously, it's a joke. So, apparently this stable came around in 2010. And this stable was called the Zoo World Order.
Oh, yep.
The members of this team, and you have no clue who any of these guys are, but I know who they're supposed to be. We have Tiger Nash, Goat Hall, Nico Puck, and Hollywood Kongorilla.
You know what? I could actually see them against the Minnesota Wrecking Zoo.
And apparently, they are still currently active.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
Where they're active at, I have no clue, but they are active still.
Look, Eric Cannon, First Wrestling, homie, best friend. If you listen to my podcast at any given point in time, you know you have to put this on. The Zoo World Order versus the Minnesota Wrecking Zoo, Estonia Thunderfrog, and Wildcat. You have to do this. Come on.
Do it.
You know you want to do it.
Do it.
It'll make money. Come on.
I don't know what kind of money. It might be Monopoly money, but it'll make money.
It'll be fun. I'm telling you. It'll be hilarious. It'll be something that would be enjoyable for everybody. Or at least for myself and Monkey, because, good Lord. I'll go to Minneapolis to First Wrestling for that.
Sure.
Okay, I would. I don't know about you. I would.
I'm kind of stuck. I have no dineros. Los no dineros.
True.
It's terrible. Okay.
All right. So, let me see what I can find here.
Oh God.
Oh, because I have a feeling that I'm going to strike gold on this one.
Gold.
What the hell?
Tell me about it. What do we got?
Villainous Alliance.
By the way.
Dump Masamoto, Bull Nakano, Condor Saito, Crane Yu, Nobuko Kimura, Erika Shishido, Yasuko Ishiguro. Holy mother of God.
So this is all Japan, apparently. AJW?
Yep. Oh, my.
They sound like all women's, I assume. Yes.
Oh, my. Wow.
So this is your obviously your main villain group of all Japan.
You know what? I approve. Just with Bull Nakano and Dump Masamoto alone. Holy. You know what? That.
And Sally does not have a time sample when they're around. So this could be a possibility. And looking at this information, this might be like, you know, how GLOW was.
Right.
They established that all the villains were one group and all the heroes or faces were another group.
Right.
And this could be the all-female villains of AJW at the time.
Right.
Before they broke, you know, AJW into just men, and then the women's wrestling groups became the wrestling groups for women.
Right.
Like Stardom and whatnot. But, yeah, that's the only thing I can think of, because since there is no time stamp on when this group was formed or when they were around during, So that is the only thing I can establish from that.
Right. So all in all, I wish we could find footage of that team.
True, true. Again, and that's if they're an actual team and not just, yeah, these are all the women, female villains. So we establish they are one team.
Yes.
Because they might not even be a team at all.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club in WCW toward the end of WCW.
Yeah, we didn't.
They weren't really groups.
We don't talk about that. We just leave that alone. Anyways, Monkey, it's your turn.
All right. Let me get one more good one here. And I had one I saw earlier and then I forgot what it was. Why would you do this to me? Why?
I know there's so many unique ones on here. And once again, shout out to cagematch.net for providing us with this glorious list.
Yeah.
And whoever is moderating this, running it, please keep up the good work because we may actually have to do a part two to this.
Even just looking at just random factions and saying, okay, so this is, or just playing roulette of let's throw a name in there and find out what factions they've been part of.
Ooh, we could actually do that.
That would be a fun one to do next time. But not on this one. But
yeah, season five. Yeah. That's definitely going to be a season five. Maybe with our special guest that we're going to have next week. Which we'll be introducing a new member of Internet Wonderland next week.
Yes.
So y'all will like them. We like them.
All right. Here is an interesting group I saw. And just listening to the people in this group. And again, this might be another one of those that kind of a group but not really a group.
Right.
Things. So the stable group is called MAD, M-A-D.
Okay.
And the members of the group were Jeff Jarrett, El Divo or Divo maybe, Juventud Guerrera, Teddy Hart, Sexy Dulce, Killer Cross, El Zorro, Conan, and Jack Evans. Apparently this group was recognized as a stable or group in 2018 for promotion Mexico, spelled M-E-X-I-K-O. So, Okay. Again, looking at this group, all pretty interesting names on there. Obviously, Jeff Jarrett being recognized, Juventud Guerrera, Teddy Hart, kind of a loose cannon, Jack Evans, Conan, and Killer Cross. Not familiar with El Divo or Sexy Dulce or El Zorro, but, again, of that group, you can already see all these people who are recognized in other organizations and places. Looking at El Zorro, apparently he was La Parca Negra for a while, or at least was known as La Parca Negra, so that's one that might be recognizable a little bit more. But again, very interesting group there to see in the list. And again, one of those ones I would say was, wow, how was this not on my radar? How did I never hear about this group?
Right. You know, as I mentioned before, this is a vast resource of factions and stables that should be on TV somewhere.
Right.
But we never had the opportunity to see them.
Right.
So now for my final one, I'm going with the one of the most absurd names I've heard of.
Oh, God. This sounds like fun.
Now, this one happens to be number 2,813 on the list. Let me make sure I get the page right. Page 29. Ladies and gentlemen, I must introduce you to the stable of sexual harassment. I could say so much right now. Now, this is a group of Eric Ecstasy, JT Rogers, and Troy Lords. Now, I'm wondering if Troy Lords is a play on former porn actress turned actual actress Tracy Lords.
Right. Sounds like a possibility.
So, this team ran in the independents from 2002 to 2003. What can I say about this name? I, 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 oh my God. I really can't say too much about this name. Granted, there are other names on here, but this one takes the cake. At least for right now, it takes the cake. I mean, I could have said Sex Appeal. I could have said Sex Mafia. I could have said the Sex Pistols with two X's at the end. But for some reason, Sexual Harassment just stuck.
As a side note, apparently, Eric Ecstasy's signature movie is called The Happy Ending.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You gotta be kidding me. It's actually called The Happy.
That's one of his signature moves, apparently. It doesn't say what his finisher is, but that's his signature move, is the happy ending.
Okay, what other signature moves does he have?
That's the only one listed, at least under this database. Let's see here.
I'm just afraid.
And JT Rogers' signature moves were the Coup Dome Driver and Backslide Bomb.
Okay, not bad. Not bad.
And Troy Lords. Oh my God. Signature moves are the X Buster and the Ball Breaker. And apparently one of his nicknames is Balls Hot.
I'm sorry, what?
Balls Hot is one of his nicknames, apparently.
Balls Hot.
Yep.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Which, surprisingly enough, he was actually trained by Matt Bourne in T-Ranchula. So, he has interesting trainers, but...
The name. The name.
Yeah. Exactly. And apparently at that point, he was... When they made this group, Troy Lords had only actually been in business for about a year. Because his in-ring debut was in 2001.
Okay.
So, obviously, these were all young, fresh, new people that just started. And as an independent group, I say that this sounds like it's probably something that could have fit into XPW at the time.
Yeah. Or even CZW at this point.
Possibly. Let's see. JT Rogers was in there since 97, so he'd been around for a little bit. Eric Ecstasy made his in-ring debut in 99. So Rogers and Lee were the mentors, and Troy Lords was the rookie from the group.
Actually, I think I found one more that may actually match this one.
Oh, gods. Go forth.
You have to do one first before I do this
one. Oh, my God.
Just one more. One more.
Okay. Give me a second. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Just a random pick. Let's go with a random pick here. Okay. Let's see what this says here. Oh, I know. I want to look up.
Oh, what'd you got?
I just thought of something here. All right, so here's a group, actually, that was around, and this is actually a really good group here, and they've had some kind of flexed in and flexed out people, but one that I kind of completely forgot about until just recently, and I guess they're apparently making a return here, but they ran together from about 2013 to 2019, at least bits and pieces of them kind of flaked off into WWE and other places, but I'm talking about TMDK, the Mighty Don't Kneel.
Yes, yes.
So, again, people that were part of the group, Mikey Nichols, Shane Haste, Marcius Pitt, Jonah Rock, Slex, Hartley Jackson, Damian Slater, Elliot Sexton, Mikey Broderick, and Bad Dude Tito. Now, some of those names you might not fully recognize. Jonah Rock was in WWE as Bronson Reed. I believe Shane Haste was Shane Thorne.
Yep.
Yep, and a.k.a. Shane Thorne, a.k.a. Slapjack.
Yeah, we will not mention that name here ever again.
Elliot Sexton, I believe, is Duke Hudson. Yep. And where is... Is it Marcius Pitt was there for a while?
Yep.
No, he wasn't in WWE. Mike Nichols, I think. He was there. Yeah, Mikey Nichols was there as Mikey Whiplash. And Mick Kerrigan. Okay. So, again, Mike O'Neil, all basically from either Australia or New Zealand area. So, very, very phenomenal group. Again, they've kind of been flexed in and out, the other people. It was just a kind of a thought that I had a while back when I was looking at some of these people on one list or another, and I was like, holy crap, all these guys were part of Mike O'Neil, which was just such a crazy, crazy coincidence.
Right.
But then again, apparently, NXT became Australia uncensored for a while, so like half their freaking roster from Australia now.
Yeah.
But yes, so that is what I have.
All right.
Your next one.
My final one.
Yes.
Not that sexual harassment was bad. Which also, mind you, in real life, sexual harassment is actually very bad. Please do not be sexually harassing anyone. Please don't. It's against the law. But.
And if you keep doing it, we'll send a sexual harassment panda after you.
Yes, we will.
And he will eat your brains. Never say no to panda. Okay, carry on.
Anyways. So what happens whenever a group of young guys decide to market themselves to older women? You get the faction known as Cougar Meat.
Sorry.
So this is a group consisting of Clark Connors, Colin Cutler, and Kyle Sebastian. They ran from 2017 to 2018 in the independent circuit. Now, some interesting things. Clark Connors is 28 years old, and he currently wrestles in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he's actually from here in the States. He's from Washington State, actually. Then you have Colin Cutler, who is from British Columbia, Canada. He doesn't have a promotion that he works for currently, but he's been in for about 13 years. And, oh my God, his nicknames are C4, Cougar Meat, so thanks to him.
It looks like both him and Kyle Sebastian both have Cougar Meat as their nickname, so.
Why?
Because apparently they're Cougar Meat.
And the Canadian Classic. C4 and Canadian Classic? No issues with. Being called Cougar Meat. Wow. Then, of course, Kyle Sebastian, 33 years old. From Alberta, Canada, he was trained at the PZW Power Shop, so that's actually interesting.
As a side note, Clark Connors was trained by Lance Storm, at least at one point or another.
Yeah.
And Katsuyori Shibata and Buddy Wayne. So, and his nickname was the White Rhino, or the Wild Rhino.
So, at least it wasn't Cougar Meat.
Well, maybe it is also, but the Wild Rhino sounded more funny.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I think we've had enough fun with this one.
Oh, trust me, we're just getting started.
Yes, the true fun is barely getting started on this because we're definitely going to be touching on this one again. Because cagematch.net, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
You have given us something fun to play with. And this is going to be exciting. Just the episodes alone we could do.
Yes.
Using this reference tool.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very efficiency.
Yes. Thank you very much, cagematch.net, for this.
You're almost becoming a new Axel Braun. Not quite, but.
Almost.
But as a side note, thank you, Axel Braun.
Thank you, Axel Braun. But anyway, that actually reminds me.
Oh.
Before we sign off for the night, on my Facebook page, or my personal one, someone actually posted the ideal casting for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse live action adult oriented movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make a comment because the casting that they actually had did match for Peter Parker, for Gwen Stacy, for Mary Jane Watson, for Norman Osborn being Johnny Sins of all people. Which, thank you, Johnny Sins, for all the entertainment that you do provide to a lot of people. Most of it meme-worthy, because you have been a doctor, a lawyer, a police officer, in the military. You've done so many jobs, and you've done the job. But anyways, with this casting, there's only one man that could truly make this a vision, and I actually tagged him in a post.
Oh, God.
I actually tagged Axel Braun saying that Axel Braun is a complete comic book geek, and I bet he would take it on.
Oh, my. You would take it on?
Come on.
Take
can you?
Me on.
Come on. Okay. Think about it. Axel Braun doing an adult version of, like, Spider-Man Far From Home or Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Are we sure he hasn't done one yet?
He hasn't done one yet.
Surprising. Okay.
But I bet he will probably after this. Mm-hmm. I'll be surprised. I'll be surprised if he doesn't. But anyways, folks, thank you for joining us tonight. It has been a fun, rambunctious journey down this rabbit hole. And believe me when I say we will be doing other episodes relating to this one. I would like to thank my co-host, my brother from another mother, my ride or die, my hetero life mate, the man, the myth, the legend, Monkey, for joining me for another Thursday night.
Thank you for having me again.
Dude, you're part of this no matter what now.
Whether I want to or not, they forced me to do this, I swear. Quick, send help, send help.
So while Monkey is getting used to the gag that I had to put in his mouth, mostly fruit roll-ups. It's going to take a while for him to chew through it. But anyways, this has been another episode of Cheshire's Place, a Looking Glass in a Logical Madness. As always, I have been your host, the melodious one, Mr. Cheshire. And just as my namesake, the Cheshire Cat, I am everywhere, yet nowhere. Stay tuned for next week's episodes. Have a good night.